Good afternoon. The House Education Finance Committee will come to order. Let's see, Representative Erickson, have you had a chance to review the minutes for our last meeting?
Madam Chair, I'll move approval of the minutes from March 13, 2018.
All right. Representative Erickson moves approval of the minutes. Any questions or comments? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. Minutes are approved. Thank you, Representative Erickson. All right, so we've got three bills up for today, and all having to do in some manner or form with special education. And Representative Erickson, I believe, because Representative Christensen is not going to be here, you're going to present House File 2846. Should we go ahead and take your place? Thank you.
Madam Chair, is this on?
I think so.
Doesn't feel like it.
Yeah, before we pull it a little closer, it is a little faint.
Before we begin, I'd like to introduce former Senator Jen Olson, who's sitting over here to my right.
Yes. And Senator
Olson. I put a bug in her ear that she should testify during the dyslexia bill because she has a great knowledge of all of these amenities that can be added to our good legislation.
Yes, well, thank you so much. And Senator Olson, of course, chaired the Senate Education Committee in her tenure in the Senate and has been a tremendous leader in education and leading reforms for our children. And so we are really honored by your attendance today. So, yes, anything that you feel so moved to testify on, you are more than welcome. So thank you.
And, Madam Chair and Committee, I'd just like to add that while Senator Olson and I were chairing policy committees, in 2011, we added teacher evaluation, principal evaluation, third grade reading, and 10th graders to PSEO and career in tech. And I think much more. But those were some of the highlights.
A good run.
So, Madam Chair, I'd like to move 2846 to be heard before the committee and hope that you will lay it over for possible inclusion.
Yes, Representative Erickson moves that 2846 be sent to the General Register, but it's my intention today to lay it over. So, Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Committee. 2846, second engrossment, is a bill that creates a special education working group to review how special education is provided and funded and to make recommendations to reduce the costs of providing special education services. You will notice in the bill that we have the duties laid out, and they're quite comprehensive in regard to the delivery and costs and the report. You will find those under Section 1, Subdivision 1. And I don't think I need to say anything specific about that other than the Office of the Legislative Auditor's report also should be noted. That was done in 2013, and we want the working group to review that. In the policy bill that will come to you, Madam Chair, I will add another group. So there are 18 members of the working group, and that will be C, the Schools for Equity in Education. Then, Madam Chair, the Commissioner of Education, and this is a little different for a working group. The Commissioner of Education is the one who's going to convene the first meeting, and that will be no later than July 15 of this year. And then the group will select chair or co-chairs, which is typically what's done with the working group. There's no compensation, of course, because the Office of Legislative Commission will be overseeing this. And I think, Madam Chair, with that, a report is due to the legislature by January 15 of next year. We do have one caveat in this under the report that's, I think, interesting to note, and that's that the working group will submit a report of its findings and recommendations to the chairs and ranking minority members of the legislative committees with jurisdiction over K-12, and then we'll review that to create legislation that could come forward. So this is a way to review by the legislature. This is not a legislative working group like the teacher licensure was, but this gives us a chance to give our reaction to the recommendations that come forward. So, Madam Chair, with that, I'll stand for questions.
All right. Thank you, Representative Erickson. Any questions for Representative Erickson before we turn to testifiers? All right. Not seeing any. I think we'll go ahead and hear from testifiers. And some have notified us that they would like to present testimony on this. So representative from AMSD, MASA, MASBO, MSBA, and Chris McHugh are the people who have indicated they want to testify ahead of time. And welcome. And would each of the testifiers just please identify yourselves and then offer your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. My name is Scott Grunquist with the Association of Metropolitan School Districts. I am happy to speak in favor of House File 2846 and want to thank Representative Christensen and also Representative Erickson for pinch-hitting today. You all know the issue of special education and the cross-subsidy very well, so I am not going to spend a lot of time going over that, but it is, in fact, the 800-pound gorilla, really, of school finance, and it is probably the single largest reason that our school districts continue to face budget challenges year after year. Even after a year when you provide 2 and 2 in the formula, you know, and really work hard to do that, the reality is that provided about $121 per pupil increase in the current year, another $124 next year. And if our special education funding formula was being fully funded, it would have been great. We would be sitting in pretty, you know, in a pretty picture. Unfortunately, our average cross subsidy for our member school districts is $964 per pupil. So you pretty clearly get an idea of why school districts do continue to face tight budgets. So we are very much looking forward to participating in this working group and strongly support the bill. Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
Thank you, Mr. Grunquist. Ms. Dosland.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Valerie Dosland, and I'm here today representing the Minnesota Association of School Administrators. Gary Amoroso was at another meeting at this time, and then also the Minnesota Association of School Business Officials. I'd like to thank Representative Christensen and members of the committee for their interest in the bill, and just wanted to express our support. You know, as Scott Grunquist mentioned, you learn a lot about the cross-subsidy, but this task force, working group, will look at a number of other different issues affecting special ed, and you'll actually hear about one of those issues in a bill that's up on the agenda today. But I just wanted to point out to you lines 1.20, the effect of the 2013 statutory changes to special ed funding. We're especially interested in that because I think you'll start hearing from your school districts around the state the impact that those statutory changes have had on special ed funding. So we look forward to continuing the work and having the discussion, and thank you for your time.
Thank you very much, Ms. Dosland. Appreciate you being here. Ms. Seedrick.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Denise Dietrich with the Minnesota School Boards Association. And we also would like to thank Representative Christensen for authoring this bill and bringing it forward this year. As you all know, that Minnesota right now is experiencing a $679 million cross subsidy, and it is expected to grow. And so this issue is very important to school board members across the state as they grapple with trying to balance their budget, and they start already with a projected cross subsidy in special education. And in fact, I just wanted to mention to you that this issue has actually become our school board's number one issue this legislative session. And it really became relevant in a grassroots type of way. We were actually in Little Falls, and the board members there were talking about what an issue this was. And it really just started to mushroom. And so as a result, we asked school boards to pass a board resolution asking for a special education cross-subsidy task force. And 180 school boards across the state have passed a resolution asking for this task force. And I mention that to let you know that we appreciate your response to the school boards. And when we have day at the Capitol on Monday, we will be making it very clear that you have responded to their requests. And then we also want to put a little bit of a caveat to this, in that we really hope that this task force can come up with actionable items that can be implemented over the next 5 to 10 years that will make a difference in the cross-subsidy. In other words, let's not let this task force do what many others have done, create a report with some recommendations that go nowhere. So with that, we want to once again support this bill strongly. Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right. Thank you very much, Ms. Dietrich. And are you Mr. McHugh?
Madam Chair, thank you for the opportunity to testify. My name is Chris McHugh. I'm the chairman of TSA Incorporated in Pine City, where we provide SchoolLink mental health services. I retired 10 years ago as director of the St. Croix River Education District. I stand today with the students who are here at the Capitol pleading for safety, and thank all of you for your investment in mental health. We have 19 staff in each school in Pine and Chisago counties and are at full service with every student in those buildings having access to mental health services right in their own school. Thank you for making this contribution to making these schools safer than they were. I've been honored to testify to this panel many times, notably in 2007, to assist in the passing of Minnesota's bipartisan response to intervention, now called MTSS law, that focused on a data-based approach to bring effective reading instruction to students at an early age to prevent special education placement. The legislature then made grants of $4.5 million to our education district to train teachers around the state and higher education faculty in effective reading practices. Alas, as a result of the Great Recession, there was no funding to continue. One of the stellar programs that is thriving today, and we have our, one of the authors, Senator Olson, who I'm tickled pink to see here today, and also under the leadership of Alice Segrin and Audrey Suker, and that's thriving today, and that's the Minnesota Reading Corps. Our education district, SCRED, was privileged to host, and I supervised the first cohort of Reading Corps volunteers now spread throughout the state. I'm testifying today to connect the dots between two bills you are hearing today regarding the establishment of a special education working group and training teachers in dyslexia. My comments are neither in favor nor against these bills, but I would rather provide some augmentations you might consider in your work in the area of special education and reading. With regard to the dyslexia bill, which you're going to hear shortly, I hope you all understand that you're engaging in a specialty of the legislature, establishing another silo of service delivery. For decades, you and your predecessors here and in Washington have wrestled with the issue of reading achievement, often by establishing new programs. Title I of what is now the ESSA started it all, followed by the federal disability law that included what was hoped to be a small category called specific learning disabilities, SLD, that is now the largest category of special education service. Here in Minnesota in the 1980s, there was assurance of mastery, the alternate delivery of instruction, pre-referral, and codifying state criteria for identifying learning disabilities, all still in place in addition to the regular classroom. In the 1990s and 2000s, as I said, I was here to assist by providing the core language to the Minnesota RTI law at 125-56. This was supposed to be the law that brought all the silos together, but it was not to be. The law was marginalized by the Department of Education's professional staff, and Minnesota doubled down on its SLD criteria, which is a wait-to-fail model that delays the provision of valuable special education services until students have had the opportunity to fail at reading, usually about third grade, which you all know is the age at which, if one hasn't learned to read, one is not likely to ever do so. Candidate Mark Dayton spent a day in 2009 with us at SCRED and was enthused about this approach to bring the silos together to effectively teach students to read. In 2015, I was at a meeting with the governor to review what had been accomplished, or more precisely, what had not. In that meeting, the governor was appalled at the special education wait-to-fail model and not once but twice asked the commissioner to change it in order yet to be carried out. Our bill to change this was not adopted. So having decided that we're not going to have the silos work together, the 2016 legislature got back to the business of establishing more silos, which brings us to the new dyslexia silo. So how does that connect us to your other bill today, one that establishes another special education study group? There are many worthy questions proposed in this proposed study, but I think the core question, and I'm not at all to disregard the important financial matters, is the number three, which says to analyze trends in special education enrollment and the reasons for the increased proportion of Minnesota students receiving special education. Let me save you some time with some basic data that I think many of you already know. 5% of the school population is identified as having a specific learning disability. 80% of those labeled is because of reading failure. In Minnesota, that means that of the 30,000 or so students with SLD, 24,000 are placed due to reading failure, virtually all of them identified using the state-approved wait-to-fail model. I'd suggest you start with these 24,000 students, and a couple of you, bipartisan if could be, sponsor a bill to eliminate the wait-to-fail model and get Minnesota to join other states in becoming a statewide MTSS state, the alternative to wait-to-fail, where you will make the silos work together and identify reading challenges in either preschool or at the latest by November of the kindergarten year. I notice that the special education study does not have representation from higher education, and that's fine. But let me tell you why Minnesota has a reading achievement problem and why there are 24 students who are placed into special education due to reading failure. After 42 years of considering this, I'm very grateful to have had access to the district literacy plans that the legislature in a law written by Senator Olson included many required school districts to publish literacy plans. In almost all school districts, including many of our largest districts, they've adopted a reading approach, often with no formal curriculum, called Balanced Literacy. Balanced Literacy is a great program for the one-third of children who show up in kindergarten already knowing how to read, and does no harm to the other third who will learn to read with any curriculum. For the one-third of students who are going to struggle, and this percentage is much higher in high poverty sites, Balanced Literacy, the core feature of most districts' reading program, is a perfect plan to ensure that students do not learn to read. I can't imagine that any one of you believe this is sound public policy. In Minnesota, our crown educational jewel is the University of Minnesota, where the College of Education has recently redesigned their Center for Applied Research and Educational Improvement to provide system analysis to schools. I take a little bit of that small surplus and ask CARI, as it's called, to answer one question. Why are so many students in Minnesota failing to learn to read, and what can be done about that? The financial implications are very important when you look at those numbers regarding the financial concerns that the associations have just brought to your attention. But I believe if you did such a study that their answer is going to come back to remind you that until poverty is addressed, nothing you do will provide for universal student achievement, that schools are not using scientific evidence-based reading instruction, and that we let students fail before we intervene. I believe you will have a comprehensive blueprint for the first time to solve this problem to the extent the poverty allows. The alternative is the status quo. You can continue to develop more silos, keep the old ones funded, and continue to enable poor instructional decision-making in our schools, because that's what we're doing right now. But understand that reading failure will continue to be a permanent topic for this body, with continued waste of resources and continued failure for students. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you, Mr. McHugh, certainly giving us something to think about. Appreciate you being here. Mr. Heller, you wanted to testify, so why don't you please come down?
Thank you.
right? And please just identify yourself for the record.
Hi, everybody. My name is Rick Heller. I unofficially represent the twice exceptional people with print disability. They ask that the record would reflect that.
It will. Please proceed, Mr. Heller.
The twice exceptional is found on House File 1070 on line 3.2.2. Ms. Erickson's bill. I hope somebody is willing to pick that bill up. She's pretty busy right now, and perhaps she's willing to have a hearing on that before the end of the session. The print disabled are found in the Higher Education Act of 2008, as well as the IDEA Act of 2004. They're right next to the blind. There's only two of them, blindness and print disability. Come to testify on today's bill, the Christensen bill. I don't have the number. However, since twice exceptional does not have a definition, and I believe the House version has everybody's invited, but if we don't have identification for who the twice exceptional are, how can you invite them? I've said before at the Policy Committee, I don't believe the bill has enough meat or even substance. I'll say it again in the report to the legislature, special education assistive technology legislature report 214-14. On page 14 mentions UDL. I can't stress enough that you need to have selection, acquisition, and use for substance in this bill, because that is UDL. And for the record, Social Security SSA.gov/accessibility browse allowed HTML page. It mentions learning disabilities, dyslexia, and English as a second language. It does not mention blind. Another one at uscourt.gov, download-plugin-ins. Browse allowed helps individuals who have difficulties reading text online, literacy problems, learning disabilities such as dyslexia, limit English language skills, and find it easier to listen to spoken text instead of reading the words on the page. I can't say this enough. If we know this at these agencies, somebody needs to come up with a bill now, because this whole thing about the achievement gap was about accessibility. Because you got the IQ here and you got the achievement here. There's a difference. 2 years, you get your label. University of Nine is supposed to make a level playing field now. Unless you put it in the bill, instead of looking at the numbers and how it's going to feed, because those numbers weren't really meant to come together, even though it was promised. Universal design is for everybody. And that's coming out of Harvard now, called Extras Educational Materials. CAS, Center for Applied Special Technology.org. Can't stress it enough. However, it's up to the leadership to take this on. I appreciate the opportunity to speak.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Heller. Thanks for being here today. All right. Is there anyone else from the public who wishes to testify on House File 2846? All right. Not seeing any. I have asked the pages to pass out a spreadsheet that Mr. Strom has prepared. And I think what we do right now, Mr. Strom, is have you explain this to the committee so we know what this is. And then we will resume discussion. And I know there's an amendment as well. Mr. Strom.
Madam Chair, members, many thanks to the department for getting us a special education spreadsheet that we can use to think about some of the formula bills that you'll be hearing in the next few weeks. The special education aid printout in front of you is an estimated levels for the 2017-2018 school year, and there's a couple of parts of this that I want to bring to your attention, as they'll be issues that you'll hear about with the Monticello bill and some others later. So the way that the spreadsheet is organized is that the special ed formula has an initial aid calculation, an excess aid calculation, and then the tuition billbacks that you've heard about all session are factored in, and then the cap comes into play, and finally the net aid amount is reached. So to get to that $1.379 billion of special education aid that's expected to be spent in fiscal year 2018, the following calculations happen. We have a three-part initial calculation for a number of reasons. When the governor's new formula was implemented a few years ago at the funding level that was eventually agreed upon, the formula is the lesser of the first three columns. So it's the lesser of the predicted costs, should actually be the least, I suppose, since there's three of them. The lesser of the second choice is the FY16, what we refer to as the old formula amounts. And then the third column is the new formula amounts, which include the per pupil or the census categories. And you can see there, if we just use the Aiken School District as a model, under the projected cost model, $1.33 million would be their estimated amount. Under the old formula, $972,000. And under the new formula, $971,000. The statute says to take the least of those three, so you can see the $971,000 moves into the minimum of the three. And then the pupil transportation, special education transportation for pupils is 100% reimbursable, and that's also, I think this committee's had a few discussions about the homeless transportation. Whether or not a child is special ed qualified, a homeless child is transported under the special ed formula. And so the combination of the $971,000 and the transportation equals the $1.246 million for the Aiken School District. That's the starting that's the starting place of the formula, the initial aid amount for them. Then there's also a choice between the greater of two things for the excess cost aid. And the reason that there are so many complications here is the governor's initial recommendation a few years ago needed a fair amount more funding to do away with the grant portions or the transition revenue involved. So the excess cost aid, here are the choices for the greater of these two, and the big difference between the two is whether or not the non-federally reimbursed or the federally reimbursed costs are included or not in the starting point of that calculation. And so the greater of the two for Aiken is the $196,000, so that's the district's excess cost aid. So we add those two amounts together, the $1.2 million in initial aid, the $196,000 in excess aid, and that gives us the special education initial aid amount, as it were, of $1,442,000. There's two other adjustments that come into play. The first of those, which we've heard some discussion of this session, is the tuition billbacks amount. And you can see there that for the Aiken School District, they're receiving $23,000 for the billbacks that they receive for students of other districts that they're charging back to those districts. And they're paying other districts $174,000 in tuition payments for 90% of those districts' unreimbursed costs. So you can look up and down that column and see the relative amounts of tuition receipts each district gets and tuition payments that they're making to other school districts. Then the last adjustment that's made is the reduction for the cap. There's a per pupil growth cap in place, and that adjustment gets made in the second to last column. And then finally, the sum of those columns is added up, and the total amount of special education revenue, what we refer to as the net special education aid, is distributed in the aid payments to each school district and charter school. So, Madam Chair, it's a ton of material in this printout, but it may be helpful for members as they start thinking about the various aspects of the special education formula and as they think about what the working group is going to be looking at when it considers how these parts of the formula work.
Thank you, Mr. Strom, and this is very helpful. If we use this again, I make one suggestion would be under the reduction for cap, you may want to put parentheses around those numbers to clearly indicate they're a reduction of expenditure. I don't know if there's another category that would be similar, but
and Madam Chair, the tuition in the fourth to last column, the tuition payments to others are a negative as well. So,
okay.
For example, the Aiken School District is losing 174 of its initial special education aid in the tuition billbacks to other districts, and so those are a negative as well.
Yes, just you know, as we're accustomed to reading spreadsheets, I think that would be helpful.
So. Absolutely.
All right. Thank you. Any questions for Mr. Sharm? Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just wondering why there's a cap.
Mr. Sharm.
Madam Chair, Representative Peterson, as with many formulas in the 2013 session, I can't remember if it's 2013 or 2014, the House, Senate, and Governor each had very different ideas of how to do the K-12 funding for that year. And in conference committee, as the priorities played out, the new special education formula was quite important to the governor, but the funding that was left essentially was less than what the governor's plan initially recommended. And so the result was both in those first three columns, the choice of the minimum there was not part of the governor's original plan. That was a result of the compromise level of money being reached that was too low. And same with the dollar cap, the per pupil growth dollar cap. That was another item that essentially was a cost saver that was put in place in time so that the special ed changes that were ultimately agreed to by the three parties were fitting within the amount of revenue that they had previously agreed would be allocated to special ed.
Representative Peterson, follow-up?
No.
Okay. Any other questions for Mr. Strom about the spreadsheet? Okay. All right. So I think we'll go ahead and turn to the amendment. And Representative Sandstead, I believe it's your amendment. There should be the H2846A11 amendment in your packets. Representative Sandstead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I'd like to move the A11 amendment or the H2846A11 amendment.
Very good. Representative Sanson moves the A11 amendment to your amendment.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We were able to hear this bill in GovOps, and I think it's an excellent bill. I have no problem with the bill in its entirety, save for one thing. What this bill does specifically is it leaves us with a charge to reduce funding in special education. And my amendment says if warranted. That's all it does. So I think it's appropriate to go ahead and study it. And if the evidence supports reducing funding in the future, that's fine. But if the evidence shows something other than that, I don't want whatever body is before us in a year from now, 2 years from now, to be directed to reduce funding even if the evidence may not support it. So we're left at the end of the day with what's on paper, and the paper says specifically the charge is to reduce costs, to reduce funding, and I'm just saying if warranted. That's the meat of my amendment.
All right. Thank you, Representative Sandstead. Any discussion? Representative Erickson, would you like to speak to the amendment?
Only that I think when we created this proposal, that costs, we were thinking more in terms of different services that occur, not reducing funding overall, but some of the costs that are incurred while services are provided. I think that would be the only thing I have to say, Madam Chair. I think the amendment is just fine.
Thank you. Representative Sandstead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have no question about the intent, and as we discussed it in GovOps, that was very clear. So I agree with that. And I did speak with the author of the bill, Rep. Christensen, and discuss this. He was in support of it. I just want to point out, within the bill itself, on lines 1.8, it says to reduce the cost, which kind of equates to reducing funding in the long term, in my opinion. We see it again in line 2.7. And then in line 2.8 specifically, it says an overall special education funding. So, again, like I said, at the end of the day, we're left with what's on the paper. Whoever the body is before us in 2019 will have to look at that. And so I just want to say, if warranted, my experience, having left the classroom 3 weeks ago, says the evidence may say something very different. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Sandstead. No other comments or questions. All in favor of the A11 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, the amendment is adopted. Thank you, Representative Sandstead. All right, any other discussion to the bill as amended? Representative Wills.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I don't serve on the Education Policy Committee this term, so I apologize if this isn't exactly finance, but I'm just curious. At the top of page 3, the Commissioner of Education must designate the following individuals to serve as members, and then there's several representatives listed there. I'm just curious by what process they would designate, if it would be open to the public to apply, how that would work. I don't know if you can address that, Representative Erickson.
Representative Erickson.
Madam Chair, we have in subdivision 2 under A, members, and then under B of that subdivision 2, we also have asked the commissioner, who will convene the first meeting, to also designate certain individuals to serve. And those primarily are from groups other than the kind that are listed under A. So this is rather unusual, a working group that is convened by the commissioner. Nevertheless, we want the commissioner to also involve members from those various groups. And this might be an anomaly, but I think it's a good way to process the issue that we're facing with special education, whether it's cross-subsidy or services. We need people from all walks, and teachers and others involved.
Representative Wells?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I agree, and I appreciate that. I guess I'm just curious, would the commissioner be appointing individuals, like they would actually go out and seek and appoint these individuals, or is there going to be some process by which the public could apply and then the commissioner would select from those applicants?
Representative Erickson?
Madam Chair, that's not something that we really have discussed in detail, and we use the verb must designate the following individuals. So the public is certainly going to be asked to get input through testimony. A working group is designed so that there's a lot of input from the public. So this will be advertised both through the department and other means. All of these member groups that are listed, I'm sure they're going to spread the word so that the public has input. Otherwise, I'm not sure the process the commissioner would use. Perhaps Mr. Ooney would like to fill in there what is usually done when the commissioner designates.
All right. And Mr. Ooney, if you have any comments on that, please come down. If you don't, that's okay. We'll probably come back to this. So. All right, not at this time, but...
Madam Chair, I don't foresee an issue here with the commissioner designating individuals to serve.
Oh, thank you. And Representative Wills, just so you know, because we're going to lay the bill over today, but I think we'll have discussions. I don't know if the department has a specific process because this isn't the first time we've asked them to appoint people to a task force or a working group, so we'll find out.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I look forward to that.
Thank you. Representative Murphy.
Madam Chair, Representative Erickson, I'm in the same boat that Representative Wills is in that didn't pay much attention to this until I got to committee, and I'm not on the other committee. But when this was being discussed in your committee, did it talk about the place of the legislators other than that we will have that report from the legislative study group in 2019. All this other working group is without legislators, and we're the one that has to listen to all the, and I listened just this morning to my local school people that came in, and they talked about the devastation to the special ed program because of the cap. And they were over a million dollars short because of the cap. And I should do something about it. But if there's a study group going on making recommendations to things, and then the legislature is going to be making recommendations based on those recommendations, and we don't have any legislators on this working group, where are we going to get our wisdom from other than observing all the tapes? But shouldn't the legislators have some voice in this working group? Did you discuss that, and why did you come to the conclusion not to mention any legislators?
Representative Erickson.
Madam Chair and committee, and especially Representative Murphy, I helped create the language and specifically thought we should leave legislators out because the experts are listed here, as well as the designated individuals who will serve on behalf of the commissioner's designation. Sometimes legislators can bog down a process. So we included the subdivision 6 for the report. We'll get a chance to review it, and then we'll give our input because we're the ones who create the legislation, if there's legislation to follow up. But in the meantime, I think it's best that we concentrate on the experts who are all listed, and there will be an 18th, as I said earlier, when we add C. So I think this is a good way to approach it and leave those of us, I certainly don't have expertise in special education, but I know that many who are listed here certainly do. In fact, I would say that all 18 have a really good working knowledge of special education, as do the 7 who are listed under the commissioner's designation. So I think we have to have faith that we have more than legislators out there who are very wise and very knowledgeable in this area, who will bring probably the best reaction to what has happened in special education. Certainly, you know, the dollar amount and anything dealing with funding has to be reviewed by the legislature and introduced in bill form. But I look forward to what we would call a uniqueness in this working group, and that's that we are counting on the experts to provide this report to us, and then we will respond in kind.
Follow-up, Representative Murphy.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Erickson. And I have faith. And I don't think that I'm an expert in any way on anything, but I think that there are people on our staff that could become experts, and then that would strengthen the possibility that this report that's required by the legislature, for the legislature to create this report and recommend issues for a 10-year strategic plan to develop the recommendations for the future, needs some kind of a working person with expertise for it to have any validity or to be not put on the shelf, so to speak, in 2020. And I don't see how we're going to get to that if we don't have a constant person. If the legislature doesn't have a constant person or an attendee, and I suppose that's the key, is anybody can be an attendee, but have a responsibility to have some kind of input or along the way with these experts in case our voice wants to be heard before the committee report on the legislature by the legislature in 2019. I don't have anything more to say about it.
Thank you. Representative Erickson.
Madam Chair, I understand Representative Murphy's concerns. This will no doubt go through a conference committee if it survives both the policy bill and this venue. But I met with many of these folks during the interim, and I proposed, you know, should we have a legislative working group, or should we have a working group that really is comprised of your experts? And they went the way that I just mentioned in my letter statement. So I honored that, and that's what we created. So I guess time will tell in the final product what prevails.
Thank you. And I would suspect, Representative Murphy, that staff will be probably in constant attendance at those working group meetings, and I think probably a lot of legislators, as their time allots them to be listening and hearing discussion and hearing the testimony is presented as well. And I fully expect that the school districts and who are providing these services will be making sure that we are keenly aware of the recommendations coming from the working group. I think I have met with probably, I'm going to say close to representatives of close to at least 50 school districts so far this year, and special education has been mentioned at every single one of those meetings. So it's a very important topic.
Madam Chair, I totally agree with you on everything that you just said. But I think to get to the final point, the legislative voice should be part of it with the school districts and with the experts and with the Department of Education. I just am hesitant to think that we can't lend something to the whole before reacting to the report. Because I'm thinking that sometimes things become reality from working groups. Working groups are really great in my mind. And we have many things in process that started with a working group. And that changed, and people are really happy 20 years later because the working group results still exist. And in my experience, the reports that have been put on the shelf are those without all the experts or all the people that have feeling about the subject. Are there, but this started way before this committee, so I agree with Representative Erickson. Let it go on and see what happens.
Madam
my
Chair,
words, not her words.
Yeah. Madam Chair and Representative Murphy, you know, if you look at Subdivision 6B, we are encouraged to convene a legislative study group to review the recommendations, and I think I heard you referring to that.
Yeah.
And the 10-year strategic plan that they develop. But I think we've given the power to the people here, and then we're going to receive that information and respond to it. But again, I think that the makeup of this working group is the best we can put together. And certainly I'll be keeping tabs on it, but I don't want to be the leader of it.
Thank you. Representative Moran.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I was just looking at the experts that you list here, and I noticed that you have like a student receiving special education, and so I'm just thinking of a student there being in a cohort or a committee of professionals, and how that one student may feel or how disempowering it may be to have one student there with no one or no allies. You know, so I was thinking that it would be nice to have at least two students. And I think when we look at experts, parents are experts. You know, a parent in a parent role who have, you know, maybe themselves have some special services or as a student or have students who are receiving special services. Often enough when we bring key stakeholders together when we're dealing with children and education and families, we forget the basics. And I think sometimes that basic is just a parent who is in a parent role who can bring solutions and decisions to that table that is valid and needed. So I'm just thinking that maybe you can consider those two.
Representative Erickson.
Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Moran. You make a very good point. I think any one of those designees, we could certainly add more than one student, and we could specify that parents must be representatives from the school district of the first class, or a parent must come from the Commission of the Deaf, Blind, Hard of Hearing. There are numerous ways I think we can work in parents. So we'll continue to work on this, but thank you for bringing that up. I appreciate that.
Yeah, thank you.
And the students as well.
Yes, and thank you. Representative Moran, I think those are really good suggestions. So, again, we're going to lay this bill over today, but when it comes back around, I think we will all have the benefit of some of the suggestions made today. So other comments, questions? All right, not seeing any. Representative Erickson, any final comments on your bill?
Well, thank
Representative
you, Madam
Christensen's
Chair.
Bill, pardon me.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Committee, for hearing 2846 as amended. I look forward to this concept of having the experts come together with the designees from the commissioner to discuss this very important topic. Not only do we have a cross-subsidy issue, which we hear repeatedly, but we have other issues. We heard the gentleman who testified ask the question, why are these students placed in special education? What's happening? Are we failing that much? And we need to find those answers out. I think these groups can provide that information for us. Thank you very much, Madam Chair and Committee.
All right. Thank you, Representative Erickson. Thank you to all the testifiers and members. Good questions. With that, Representative Erickson renews her motion on House File 2846, and the Chair is laying it over for today. So thank you, Representative Erickson. All right. Representative O'Neill, if you are ready. All right, then I will go ahead and move that House File 2877 be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means, but it is my intention today to lay the bill over for possible inclusion or further action at a later time. And welcome to you and to your testifiers. And all of you, if you please just introduce yourselves for the record, but we welcome your testimony. Representative O'Neill.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I have the Monticello, actually retired now, superintendent, and his administrator for the business office, and actually a retired gentleman from MDE is just behind us who will testify as well.
All right, very good. So whoever wants to lead off, and thank you all for being here today.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, thank you very much for hearing our bill. I am Dr. Jim Johnson. Currently, I'm an associate professor at St. Cloud State University in educational leadership. Prior to that, I spent 32 years in P-12 education, the last 23 of those as a public school administrator, and the last 12 as the superintendent of the Monticello School District. So I'm very familiar with this situation. And my purpose today is to give you a brief history of what's brought us here, because this isn't just a recent event. This is something that has a long history, and I'm probably one of the few people left around who goes back to the beginning of that history. Monticello was the host of a special ed cooperative that started in the 1970s. It included Monticello, Big Lake, Becker, and St. Michael Albertville. In 2006, we were notified by MDE that we would no longer be recognized under the host configuration. There was no language in state statute regarding host. And we were also told at that time that it would not be it wouldn't be expensive for us to change. We did some homework at that time. We looked at it. We found some additional expenses. We came back to MDE, pushed back a little bit, and they left us alone, in all honesty, until 2013. And then in 2013, they came back to us and notified us again that we would need to change because of some federal funding issues. And so we started the transition to a joint powers agreement at that point so we could come in alignment with state statute. We still had concerns over increased costs and concerned over the new special ed formula that was at that point coming into play. But we did what responsible leaders would do. We sat down, we worked with representatives from MDE to make sure that we had a full understanding of what this transition would take. We made sure as much as possible that we understood the cost implications for us, for all four member districts, and for the students that we serve. Multiple meetings took place over multiple years, including people from all member districts. George Holt and Paul Farron were a major part of those meetings from MDE. And we were given verbal assurances that we would be held harmless in this process. Beginning in 2015, July of 2015, we switched over to become a joint powers organization, and we're no longer a host. At that time, through the end of FY16, we were constantly monitoring the reports we were getting from MDE, and everything was in alignment as we had been told. The dollars that we were expecting to come, the dollars that we had been told by MDE that we'd be getting, were showing up on the reports and actually showing up in our payments from MDE. They were going into our accounts. And then in October of 2016, a report came out from MDE where the numbers changed. MDE didn't catch the change. Monticello caught the change. And we went to MDE and said, this doesn't make sense. This isn't what we talked about. And there was a significant drop in what our funding was going to be for special education. We were notified by MDE at that time not to worry, that there must be something up with the formula changes and things. They were still tweaking some things. And by January of 2017, those issues should be taken care of. The reports came out in January of 2017 and actually were a little bit worse than the October of 2016 numbers had been. So, again, we asked to meet with MDE. Paul Farron came out. The representatives from all four school districts came together, and we tried to work through this issue. By the end of February, we were notified by MDE that, no, in fact, the numbers were correct, and there was nothing that they could do to help us. We requested meetings with the Commissioner of Education, with Tom Melcher, and eventually by April we were able to meet with them down here at their offices in St. Paul. Again, we were told that there was nothing that we could do, and we were told that by the end of FY17, they would be taking back $800,000. Again, we had spent money already. We had planned accordingly based on numbers that we'd been given by MDE. So we came to the legislature for support, and fortunately we were given support by this group and by the Senate as well, and we were given basically a one-year reprieve so that we could work on this issue. And that's what brings us here today. As a district leader, I believe that the Monticello School District, as well as all member districts of our cooperative, our joint powers agreement, did everything that we could possibly do to anticipate the issues that were going to come up. We planned as we should. We were fiscally responsible. We were transparent in our planning. And yet we sit here today with what I will tell you is one of the most devastating issues that I've ever seen come at a school district financially from MDE. So another piece of this goes to planning and process that we took place. In 2015, with the numbers that we had, we approached our community with a $40 million bond plus an increase in an operating levy. Again, using the numbers that we had from MDE to plan forward. We planned 3 to 5 years ahead at a time, like any responsible organization should. Our community supported us with 70% yes vote. They trusted us completely in terms of how we were handling our dollars. I can tell you today that trust has been shaken because of something that has been completely out of the control of the Monticello School District. This will result in a significant reduction in staff, a significant reduction in the programs that will be offered to students. Monticello School District is an organization that is 80 to 85% of their budget goes to people. We serve kids. Teachers, parents, those people who serve our kids day in and day out are where these dollars are going. And we have no choice, or they have no choice, but to reduce in those areas. So again, I thank you for taking the time to listen today and a little bit of the history. This time I'll turn it over to the business manager, Tina Burkholder.
Thank you, Dr. Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Tina Burkholder, the Director of Business Services at Monticello School District. And again, I want to emphasize my appreciation to this committee, yourself, Representative O'Neill, for getting that short-term fix in the language late last session to help us get more time to kind of see how we could resolve this. And I just want to talk a little bit about the planning that happened since we were notified by MD that we had to make the change. So a lot of planning happened with all the members of the districts of the co-op from 2014 up until 2016. all the business managers from the four districts and the special ed director met quarterly to try to think of all the different aspects of the transition process. One example is where we reduced Monticello's student count with the help of MDE and placed it over to the special ed cooperative. You may or may not be aware, school districts get cash flow throughout the year based on enrollment from the previous year, and the cooperative didn't exist previously, so they weren't going to get any cash flow coming in right away at the school year. So with the help of MDE, we took some students off of Monticello and placed into the cooperative so that Monticello wouldn't get too much cash during the year and then have to pay that money back. So during the 2015 school year, special education entitlement reports were being generated by MDE on how things were being calculated, and that was consistent to what the school district received the previous 2 years. Another factor that makes budgeting difficult for special ed, what Dr. Johnson mentioned earlier, is that we have to estimate our aid prior to July 1st on a very difficult formula, and final estimates aren't known until 18 months after that budget takes place. And for us, the school board adopted 2 years of budgets before final estimates were known for the 15-16 school year. Again, like Dr. Johnson mentioned, the school, Monticello School, made decisions in 2015 on a bond referendum and an operating referendum question. Had better estimates been known, different questions would have been asked of our community. A smaller bond referendum question and a larger operating referendum question would have been asked. We can't go to the store and exchange our building improvements or our security improvements and get a larger operating referendum. We can't go to the store and do that. We are stuck with what we have, and we are thankful for what we have. This Monticello community is a very conservative community, and the school board was extremely thoughtful on those two questions that we asked our residents and our businesses because of the tax impact that was going to come. The Monticello School District understands we need to follow the same formula calculation as other school districts. However, the transition to the joint powers arrangement with our cooperative made the impact of the new formula unclear to Monticello. The financial decisions made were based on what was known with the previous arrangement and the estimates provided by MDE. The proposed language would help the Monticello School District transition to the new formula, give us a little more time, the joint powers change, and time to adapt to the new reality. Losing $800,000 annually will be tough for us to adapt to, but this one-time adjustment will help us adjust to the new reality. And again, thank you for that short-term fix last year.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Burkholder. Appreciate your testimony. And Mr. Holt.
Good afternoon. I'm George Holt, and I was until July 15th of 2015, the Supervisor of Special Education Funding and Data for the Minnesota Department of Education. In essence, I'm the culprit. Okay, back in about 2009, 2006, I guess the federal rules for IDEA, the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act, changed substantially. In the old rules, the rule said that it was a joint powers or a co-op as recognized by the state. We could recognize anybody by a letter saying, yeah, you're a host. The new words became officially sanctioned. So co-ops who were officially sanctioned were what we could recognize. The only process for a co-op to be recognized is the joint powers agreement. My supervisor at the time was Mrs. Carol Hokanson, and she made a performance goal for me to eliminate all the physical hosts, and we had 15 of them at the time. And that was my process over the years. I met with Monticello. I think you were one of the first, 2006. And I remember there was the president of the Senate at that meeting. We even looked at trying to change the statute of the joint powers agreement to see if we could work in the words fiscal host. It didn't seem to work. I worked with the other joint powers, and the last one to go was during the year of the transition to a new funding formula, which created a perfect storm. When I retired on July 15th, the ideas report for that's year, the 15-16 school year, I did look at Monticello because I was promising you that this formula would work with you because we had mapped it out on the board. I remember the whiteboard. We took all the numbers and we did the calculations, knowing that we'd move the students and gen ed revenue to the co-op, reducing the amount that was going to Monticello. So when I left on my last day, I had looked at what Monticello was getting, and I think we were quite pleased. I don't know what happened after that. I'm sorry, but I retired for the fourth time. I am now working as the interim director of special education for the Columbia High School District, so I haven't quite learned retirement. I would like to say that they worked very closely with me. And the business managers, we met, I suppose, five times. One time into the late evening, I remember we had all these questions about how the enrollment would move and how the billing and purchase of service, and we worked through all the data that we could and knew. What we didn't know is what the adjustment was going to be, and I couldn't predict that because I wasn't aware of how that would be calculated by MD. So up to July 15th, everything was on task.
All right.
And it was a perfect storm because of the way the new funding formula and forming of joint powers. So I appreciate your consideration of this bill.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Holt. And thank you to Dr. Johnson and Ms. Burkholder as well. Representative O'Neill, do you have any other testifiers?
Madam Chair, I don't have any other testifiers, but I do want to reemphasize that this is a unique situation solely to Monticello. It's because they had to change from one structure to another. As much as they did not want to, and I think they held out probably longer than anyone else.
They were the last.
They were the last ones. Thank you. So this is a unique ask. This is one of the top priorities I have legislatively in this entire biennium. This is incredibly important to my school district. This is incredibly important to my community. And I just ask that you could find it in your hearts to move this forward. It's a $1.6 million ask, and I understand that that is a lot. But it will save 23 jobs in my school district. It will be 19 teachers. It will be a principal, a secretary, probably even a janitor. So this is real money to a real school district, and they have done everything that they possibly can to mitigate the situation. And if they had known in advance, they would have changed their levy. They didn't have that opportunity. So I'm asking for this to be converted to forgiveness and just allow them to move forward. They will make adjustments in the future. So I just ask your indulgence to please move this forward.
Thank you, Representative O'Neill. And I know that this has created a big impact and level of concern. I have gotten many, many emails from parents and members of the Monticello school community, as probably other members of this committee have as well. Is there anyone else from the public who wishes to testify on House File 2877? Right, not seeing any. Are there any questions for Representative O'Neill or any of the testifiers? All right, Representative Devney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. If the business director could come back. Thank you, ma'am. Did you receive a copy of this spreadsheet when it was passed out to the committee?
No, I have not.
Is the page available? I hate to ask a question about the spreadsheet that members were given. Special education aid with.
Yes,
I hate to ask you a question when you can't.
Could you provide a copy of that to the.
Especially of a business department person. So you know how to find yourself here, I trust. It's numerical.
What's the number?
882. And I'm looking at the, particularly the, let's see, one, I have to count backwards. That's always dangerous. One, two, three. The fourth and fifth rows from the right, the tuition receipts.
Okay.
And I think of having taught in Buffalo, so just down 25, for many years, I think of Monticello as a strong school district, well-respected, stable. And you have the added benefit of being right there on 94. But I'm surprised that you're a net loser when it comes to tuition billing on special ed by a lot more than $800,000 a year. Can you help me understand
yep,
that?
Yep, I would think.
Ms. Burkholder.
Thanks, Madam Chair, sorry. I believe about half of that goes to our special ed cooperative. They're the biggest recipients of our tuition billing, and they have been in the past. When we are internally, we would get all the state special education aid and kind of give it to our cooperative. We had two funds that we kept things separate, and we still do because all the employees are Monticello employees, but they're cooperative programs. So we, on an annual basis, give almost $1 million to the cooperative.
All right. Representative Dabney.
Thank you, ma'am. And do you know what percentage of Monticello students are identified as special ed for receiving special education services?
I believe, thank you, Madam Chair, I believe 11 to 14%.
Thank you.
Representative Dabney.
Madam Chair, I feel for Monticello. I guess my concern is there's 350-some other school districts in the state who are all struggling with special education funding and delivering to the last previous bill, I think, to delivering quality services there. So I find myself a little torn. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Representative Dabney. And I think, you know, staff has invested a lot of time in trying to sort out what happened and what the situation is in Monticello. I think it's a little bit unique to, I mean, every district, I think, is experiencing concerns with cross-subsidies, some much more than others. And this is a little different, but nonetheless, an issue that obviously Representative O'Neill is brought to the committee, and I know it's of great concern to their district. So, and as we've had discussions, I don't know what kind of resources the committee may receive for supplemental. So, obviously, no assurances have been made about the possibility of doing anything, whether it's this bill or something else. But I think certainly we're glad to hear from representatives of Monticello about their unique situation and what has transpired, and I think probably through really good efforts of the staff there, as outlined both between the school district and MDE, and that maybe some things just didn't get communicated perhaps in a timely manner and left you holding the bag. So Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. And so to that point, I would say that this is the perfect storm. It is so unique to Monticello because they had to change the structure of their co-op. They had to move from a fiscal host to a joint powers, and in so doing, they were made assurances that they would be made whole and be held harmless. And when the numbers came, you know, like the testimony was, that initially the numbers looked good, and then all of a sudden there was a change, and they were not good. They were not the same. They were not what they anticipated. They were not what was promised, so to speak. So my legislation is trying to make them whole from what the state had promised them.
Any other questions? All right. Seeing none, any other comments from you, Representative O'Neill?
I just thank you so much, Madam Chair, for bringing this bill before the committee today. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Again, thank you to the testifiers, and I would renew my motion that House File 2877 be laid over for further action at a later time. Thank you very much. All right. And I think I saw Representative Runbeck come in. She is here. All right. Thank you very much, Representative Runbeck. If you want to move to the testifier table, and any testifiers that you have brought with you. Okay. All right, welcome to the Education and Finance Committee, Representative Runbeck.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
And I will go ahead and move your bills so we have it before us. I would move that House File 3013 be sent to the General Register, but it is my intention to lay it over today for possible inclusion or further action at a later time. And welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And House File 3013 continues the legislature's interest in the subject of dyslexia and that particular unique learning difficulty. And I think we all know reading is the gateway to learning. And we find, and I have with me folks from the Decoding Dyslexia organization in Minnesota. By the way, I believe it's a national organization as well. So it's on the radar of a lot of folks. So that we have teachers who don't recognize even sort of the indicators of dyslexia, and teachers feel at a loss. They need more support and more curriculum help. So what this bill does is to provide at the renewal of licensure time that there would be several hours of curriculum really helping with the basic identification of dyslexia. So, but I'm going to have Rachel Berger speak to us. Unfortunately, we had a testifier, and she's been at other hearings, but our meeting got kind of long, and she had to leave. So, anyway, partly it's scheduling issue. So, but here's Rachel Berger, and she can talk more about it.
All right. I'm sorry about that. And before we turn to that, I noticed that we have a former state representative with us, and I think a member who served on this committee, Representative John Benson. So thank you very much, Representative Benson, for being here with us today. Great to see you. So, okay, and then there is an author's amendment, I believe, also for your bill today, Representative Runbeck. Is that correct?
We are looking at, is that the one adding?
I have an A18-0591 amendment.
Okay. Okay. So we are really clarifying that the Department of Education is going to provide guidance on evidence-based approaches to dyslexia and the intervention for that.
All right.
That's really the essence of the amendment.
All right. And so to get the bill in the shape the author would like, I would move the A180591 amendment. Any other questions on the amendment? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? All right. The A18 amendment is incorporated. And with that, welcome. And if you would please just introduce yourself for the record, and we welcome your remarks.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Rachel Berger with Decoding Dyslexia Minnesota. I appreciate your hearing 3013 today and the support we've received from members of the committee on this bipartisan issue for the past number of years. Whether identified or not, the National Institute of Child and Human Development states that 17% to 20% of our population struggles with dyslexia. And for the past few years, many of you have heard stories from parents across the state who are struggling to navigate our educational system in order to achieve equitable education for their dyslexic students in a setting that wasn't prepared to meet their specific learning needs. Many parents have been forced to step outside the school to serve those students and provide the specific lessons necessary to help them achieve reading proficiency. It comes at a financial burden and further creates inequity among students, as only those with the resources will access the help they need. Students aren't the only ones who face inequity issues in education. The same inequity is happening among our educators. They're simply not being provided the tools to help all students learn to read, and only those with the resources or knowledge will access this training necessary to help students with dyslexia. We conducted a statewide survey this past month and learned that within our teacher prep programs, 92% of teachers with a bachelor's degree said they could not define dyslexia, its symptoms, and 97% of those were not adequately prepared to teach a student with dyslexia how to read. When asking teachers with a master's or a doctorate degree, 92% said they could not define dyslexia or its symptoms or teach these students to read. 51% of teachers surveyed said dyslexia was never mentioned in their coursework. These numbers matter because 69% of those surveys received an education-related master's or doctorate from a Minnesota college or university. And we know this is an important issue because 48% of our teachers surveyed spent their own time and money to train themselves how to teach their dyslexic students. 17 to 20% of the children with dyslexia I mentioned earlier breaks down to approximately 4 to 5 students in every classroom. Yet when it comes to teacher prep or in-service professional development, there's a gap in the tools and the resources provided to our educators. should not provide any instruction on the disability that affects one in five students' ability to read printed word. This leaves them feeling inadequately prepared, frustrated, and ultimately responsible. To help illustrate my point, I want to share with you the concerns of a mother who called me last week. She has a second grader who is identified in kindergarten as a struggling reader due to the lack of letter recognition and pre-literacy skills. Her child had been receiving intervention since kindergarten, and after 2 3/4 years of intervention, this student is still struggling and reading at what's considered a kindergarten level. The mother explained that the child's anxious, upset, and has lost her self-confidence. The educator is equally frustrated with the multiple and continued frequent mistakes and keeps asking the child to work harder. As concerning as this is, the mother was more concerned because she's been informed that her student will no longer be receiving interventions. The instructor said it's not working, and it's too frustrating to work with a child who continues to make many careless mistakes. The thing is, this isn't an effort issue, and this isn't a teacher blame issue. This is a dyslexia issue. The teacher clearly wants to help her student. However, she wasn't given the tools to recognize this child's dyslexia, and the lack of awareness has cost both the educator and the student 2 years. In a 2016 survey collaborated in partnership with Education Minnesota, we learned that 75% of teachers have not received an in-service training on educating students with dyslexia. 96% said they have students in interventions who are unresponsive, and 94% were interested in attending an in-service training. House File 3013 would begin to provide our educators with the tools to understand what dyslexia looks like in their classroom, what supports, accommodations, and resources are available within their district and state. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Berger. Appreciate your testimony and the facts and figures you provided. Is there anyone else who wishes to testify on House 3013 as amended? Oh, Senator Nelson, or Olson. Welcome, and please just identify yourself for the record.
I'm Jen Olson. I actually came to St. Paul for Governor's Residence Council this meeting this morning over at the admin building, and straight over here, I had absolutely no idea that I would ever be at this committee meeting, much less testifying. But but anybody who knew me during my years of service in the Senate knows that literacy has been a very important issue. I was blessed with a mother who was taught first grade for 37 years, starting with the normal training and had a 2-year degree. And there was never a child that got out of her classroom that didn't know how to read. And that was an inspiration to me. And it's always been a concern of mine that as we've seen some of the challenges, even as Governor Perpich way back in the day, that's when I started, said we want to have a 96% graduation rate by 1996. Well, we not only didn't make that, but we haven't. It's the results on NAEP scores in terms of reading has been just abysmal, and if you can't read, somebody else is always going to control what access you have. If you can read, nothing can be withheld from you. So it's a tool that is so essential. It's one of the basics. And the fact that we can't deliver on the basics and end up having to send young people for remedial learning, which hasn't always worked, doesn't mean that they're going to end up graduating and completing college. But the dyslexia in the... Some years ago, I can't even remember what year, please don't hold me to it, but there was a group of people, moms in particular, that had young people that had reading disabilities and particularly dyslexia. And they had worked, many of them had found ways to help their children learn to read, because one of the things that's quite common with young people that have this challenge isn't that they're not bright. It's that they have a challenge with how they see, and it's hard to even understand that, but to be able to recognize it and to be able to overcome it, it is critical. And there were some moms on a mission, they named themselves, that came to us and invited some of the legislators in the western Hennepin County, and Representative Benson has left, but he was one of them. We were bicameral and bipartisan. There was one of each. And met with them and had demonstrated to us by John Alexander, the head of Groves Academy, a process for getting around and being able to deal with so that young people could learn to read. And Senator Kathy Saltzman and I ended up picking up the charge with that and seeing what we could do and discovering some of the things that I've been hearing today is that a lot of our teachers have not been prepared to both recognize and to instruct in meaningful ways so that young people will overcome this and achieve reading proficiency by third grade. And so it's been a passion of mine for a long time. I'll go quickly. I know you're short on time, but I want to share one example, and he has allowed me to repeat this. He was on a panel for the Minnesota Association for Dyslexia, a former state representative, John Tuma. He's dyslexic, and I don't know, you may or may not have known that. But on that panel, he told about the fact that another member of his family had the same problem, but his sister was a year ahead of him, and when he was going to start school, She was reading the first grade book, the first books that they had, and he memorized it when she was practicing it at home, and he memorized it. And when he got to first grade, when they went around to read, he could read. But then they got to the second book, and he hadn't memorized that. And so what happened was that he was sitting behind a little girl with pigtails. And when it came to his turn to read, he grabbed her pigtails and pulled them as hard as they could and got sent to the office. So he didn't have to be embarrassed because he couldn't read. Well, you know, he's a lawyer. Now he's serving on the Public Utilities Committee. These people are bright. They need understanding of how what it takes to read. And I know Kathy Saltzman, Senator Saltzman, had some of her teachers come to her and say, you know, when there were methods that worked, Reading Corps is one of those that has been working on that. How come we didn't learn that? And it sent us on a crusade to work to change and to upgrade the teacher preparation so that they did, in fact, have these skills. And there are some of these things that are still in place. But it is a challenge, it's sometimes a challenge to recognize the value of it. I had suggested that I had a chance to talk to Representative Erickson. I said, you know, I think based on how you're grappling with this, it was exciting to me to see that you're working to continue because it has made a difference, but there's nothing that we can come up with that somebody can't find a way around. And I think that's some of the challenges that you're meeting with. They're teachers. They're not going to blame teachers at all. They want to be effective. Why would they not? Why would they not want to be successful? And so it is important to assure that the things that we put in law continue to at least reinforce the fact that teachers need access to the kind of preparation that's going to make them successful. And if there's one area that is so essential for that them to be successful is in teaching young people to read. And so I just wanted to strongly encourage you to do anything that you can to work toward that end. And I do hope that I suggested that you might want to invite John Alexander, who is the head of Groves Academy, he's now the executive director. They have launched, for years, teachers have found them to get some of the preparation because they have methods that are successful, not only in identifying, but helping these young people so that they can, in fact, not have that albatross around them as they proceed in life. And I hope that before your deadlines come, that you have a chance to hear him, because they're expanding that outreach to help with the Institute of Professional Development to make some of these give opportunities for teachers to be able to learn and be successful. And we know that they want to. We have good teachers out there that want their kids to succeed. And this, but to not get past that literacy part in the early years is a handicapping condition as they go on. And it certainly affects the load that is placed on special education as well.
So. Thank you. Thank you, Senator Olson.
Madam Chair. So, yeah, I would really love to say thank you to former Senator Jen Olson.
Yeah.
How long did you serve in the Senate?
30 years. A long time for something I never aspired to do.
Well, she was a passionate advocate in the Senate for education, so it's wonderful to have you here.
Thank you.
Very good. Thank you.
Wish you well.
Thank you so much. Well, thank you for sharing your expertise and years of work on this topic as well. We appreciate you being here.
I haven't lost my passion
for it. No, clearly not. Clearly not. We're glad you shared it with us today.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else from the public who wishes to testify? And, Mr. Heller, I think you referred to this a little bit in your previous testimony, so I'm just going to go then to member questions because we've got about 5 minutes left. Questions. Representative Sanci.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is more of a statement. I think this is a fantastic bill. This is wonderful, and I would urge everybody's support on this. I do have one strong caution. However, the way the language is written, it's only addressing Tier 3 and 4 teachers. And my suggestion, and I have spoken with Representative Runbeck on this, is that this training be provided to all tiers, because ultimately what this does is it creates, in my opinion, groups of winners and losers among students. And every student, in my opinion, has the right to have the supports and the adults in front of them that are trained to identify a potential problem and get the supports that they need. A student doesn't get to select if their teacher is a Tier 1 or 2 licensure or a Tier 3 or 4 licensure, but all of our students matter, and I know that there's nobody here at this committee, you know, that has a different opinion. And it's just an unintended consequence. A suggestion would be that perhaps districts provide the training to all of their teachers at the beginning and maybe even use the 2% set aside as a funding source for that. So that's my comment.
Thank you, Representative Sanstead. And Representative Runbeck, did you want to comment?
Well, Madam Chair, I really appreciated the recommendations, and I think Representative Sanstead makes a great comment. And if we can, it would be a wonderful thing to incorporate as the bill goes along.
All right. Thank you. Thank you very much. Representative Wills.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Runbeck, for working on this. And Ms. Berger, I don't know if you could answer this. So based on the discussion that we're having, my understanding is that dyslexia would be considered a disability. And does it qualify for special education services? It's kind of a threefold question. And I'm just going back to our working group bill from earlier. I noticed that Decoding Dyslexia Minnesota is not listed, I don't believe, in the bill. And would that be something that maybe we could address in the working group? Sorry, that was a loaded question. That's three parts.
All right. And it looks like Ms. Berger would like to respond. Ms. Berger?
Madam Chair, I'm going to do my best to. I think it was three questions. I'll start with the last first. That seemed to be pretty significant to me. I believe Representative Wills was talking about the Special Education Task Force?
Yeah, working group.
The working group. We would very much like to be part of that working group. I don't believe an invitation has been extended at this point, but I do know that when I heard the Senate version, they said those listed but not limited to. So I believe that it is possible for us to be part of that.
Thank you. And then did you need a repeat of the other two questions?
Yes, please.
Representative Wills?
Thank you, Madam Chair. So dyslexia is considered a disability, correct?
Madam Chair.
Ms. Berger.
Dyslexia is a disability. It falls under the specific learning disability category. However, a number of students don't qualify for special education services, nor is it the goal to qualify them for special education services. We fully have the capability to identify students earlier and match them to the specific interventions necessary to reduce special education. These children are bright. Really, special education wasn't designed to meet their needs, and they don't have a place in there. However, when we wait to identify them until third grade, they've fallen so far behind that often the only fix we have is to offer special education services. And oftentimes that isn't specifically matched to their direct need, and majority of students who enter special education services remain there for the remainder of their academic career. I probably added more than you needed. I hope I got it.
Representative Wells.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you, Ms. Berger. That's very helpful. So it sounds like then ideally you wouldn't want, like you said, special education services for these children because you want to intervene early enough that they don't need it. And yet it sounds like it would still be helpful to include a representative from Decoding Dyslexia on the Special Education Working Group for those kids who unfortunately are not caught in enough time, and so that there's a voice there for those kids.
Ms. Berger. Madam Chair, it would be helpful to include a representative from Decoding Dyslexia Minnesota. I think we are definitely very interested, one, on behalf of those who do qualify for special education, but two, the interest is definitely to ensure that we come up with solutions to help reduce the special education referrals that we're seeing such a mass for currently.
Representative Wells.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate the time. And I agree completely. The more we can focus on early intervention and getting those kids the services that they need and get them streamlined, it's better for everyone, better for those kiddos. And I think, too, as we move forward, it sounds like the Senate may have language that would allow them to be involved, but maybe we can also talk to Representative Christensen and see if we could get them specifically listed. So just something for us to work on.
Thank you. Appreciate the suggestion. So any other questions? I know we are running right up to our time limit, which happens a lot. All right, not seeing any. Representative Runbeck, any final comments you'd like to make?
Madam Chair, just appreciate the time and your interest.
Thank you. Thank you. And thanks so much to testifiers, Ms. Berger, and especially to Senator Olson for offering your comments and your wisdom on this. We appreciate it. With that, I renew my motion that House File 3013 is amended. I'll be sent to the General Register, but again, announce my intention to lay it over for today for further action at a later time or possible inclusion in an omnibus bill. Thank you so much. With that, we have completed our agenda for today. Thank you to our special guests and to you, too, Representative Benson, former rep, for being here with us. Committee is adjourned.